Hello, hello. This is Lori Atkins of the Happy Nipple Podcast. Excited to bring you the actual nipple podcast. Because did you think we wouldn't actually do a podcast about, well, nipples? Of course we did. So here we are. This was a fun kind of an exploration of nipples and what they mean in culture, in our womanhood, in our personhood, and what happens to them, like what can happen in breastfeeding, in the physicalness of a nipple and what that means, nipples when they're healthy. And most people don't know what nipples do when they're healthy, except for lactation consultants. Most people know when there are bad things that happen to nipples. And we're going to talk about that too with my friend Vanessa, who is an excellent IBCLC. And she and I had a great conversation about nipples. And I think you're going to really enjoy it. Couple things that we didn't touch on that I wanted to get to the nip tip of the week with this podcast episode. I wanted to talk about nipple shields. We really didn't get into that in the podcast, and I wanted to kind of circle back to the front of the podcast and talk about nipple shields. And I see them everywhere, right? They're in the grocery store almost. They're in Walmart and Target and baby stores. And the nipple shield can be a really good tool when you need it. And they can allow a baby to latch when a baby can't latch in any other way. And when I worked in the NICU, we used them for, you know, babies who just didn't have the oral oomph to hold on to a nipple. Because babies have to do a few things at the breast. They have to suck, swallow, coordinate breathing, and then hold on to the breast with some tension in the jaw and the tongue and the lips to kind of allow them to stay on. And sometimes when babies are little or they've had some birth trauma or they're early, or any other reason, babies with oral restrictions or tongue or lip ties, sometimes they just cannot hold on to the breast. And the nipple shield allows that to happen. It shouldn't be used in a baby shower gift, meaning you shouldn't just get one. Excuse me. You shouldn't get one just in case. That's Molly. Say hi to Molly. Think about working with a lactation professional before you jump into a nipple shield. You know, they get a bad rap sometimes from lactation professionals. Oh, don't use a nipple shield. You have to get the baby off. Get the baby off as soon as you can. And you know what I say? No, don't worry about it. Use it as long as you need it. And then we can try and sneak it away from the baby if the nipple is elevated enough. There are so many reasons that you would use a nipple shield in the first place and then continue to use it if you need it. So the nipple shield is a valuable tool to use when you need it, when baby needs to latch to a breast, and that's the only way it's going to happen. So don't worry about it. If you're using it with a professional, with an IBCLC who's kind of guiding you and looking at breastfeeding over time, it can be taken off or used. And I actually had a mom once who used it for 11 months and it worked for them. So it's a really personal intervention between mom and baby and whatever is actually happening in their breastfeeding journey. So don't knock it, but don't use it if you don't need it. And if you find yourself on, you know, using a shield and breastfeeding isn't going well, again, reach out to a local international board certified lactation consultant to help you figure things out. The other thing I wanted to talk about, and I don't know that we got into it too much, is nipple piercing. Lots of people pierce their nipples and they do it for aesthetics. They do it for sexual gratification and enjoyment. You know, it just looks cool for some people. And usually those decisions are made, you know, a little younger. And again, not knocking what you do you. But I also wanted to talk about what can happen with a nipple piercing. Those spots can leak well after the nipple piercing is removed. So if you want to breastfeed your baby, I would think twice about nipple piercings. Again, no judgment at all. But those holes that the nipple piercings can stay in can stay open for a long time, and milk can leak. Some people do not at all, and they heal fine, and life goes on. Other people, and I hear from women all the time who are like, oh, I wish I never had these, because of the leaking of milk that can kind of happen pretty consistently with lots of piercings. So again, love it. Love it. You do you, girl or boy or person. But just be careful of nipple piercings in later decisions. What does Jimmy Buffett say? It's a permanent reminder of a temporary feeling. It's a great song if you haven't heard it. But anyway, so there's our prelude to the Happy Nipple podcast, Nipples. And I just wanted to jump on and do a little addendum here and there. And as always, thank you for listening. If you have any feedback, please send it to obabylactationcare@lori@obabylactation.com. And I would love to hear feedback from any of our Happy Nipple episodes. So there we go with the nip tip. And here we go with our nipples episode. And enjoy.
Good morning, my friend Vanessa. How are you?
I'm great, Lori. How are you?
I'm so glad to have you today. For all who is listening, who are listening, this is the Happy Nipple Podcast, and we are doing a podcast about the nipples, because of course we have happy nipples, and we needed to do this. This conversation has gone on for a long time between us. We were like, yeah, we're going to do this. We're going to do this. And this is the lovely Vanessa Janik, and I will let Vanessa tell you a little bit about her. I'm glad to have her, and we are lucky to have her on the podcast today. Hi.
Hi. So I'm Vanessa. I am a nurse and a lactation consultant, and Lori was really instrumental in helping me, you know, do my diligence before getting certified. I love Lori. I love working with Lori. I have previously been a doula, full spectrum doula.
Well, that part.
Childbirth educator, student APRN, all sorts of stuff. All manner of hats in the birth and lactation world. So yeah, I'm super excited to be here. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we're gonna have a good nipple conversation, because who talks about nipples? No one.
I know, right?
Totally. Nobody. And we talk about it so freely. It's so funny because it's just part of what we do. But how many times do you hear women and birthing people be like, you talk about nipples, and they go, and they clam up, or they're like, it's so taboo, right?
Mm-hmm. Or when people come in for, you know, a lactation visit, and they're a little shy about, you know, showing the breast, showing the nipple. And we're like, bring it out, you know.
It's we're the mechanics. I say that to people all the time. I'm like, look, you wouldn't be weird about driving your car into the garage. Drive down nipples in here and let's take a peek. Because it does affect how a baby can feed at the breast. And there are so many other amazing things about nipples. I mean, I always knew that, but then when we started getting ready to do the podcast, I was like, oh, I didn't know that fact. And oh, that's cool. And so I think it's important to think about our audience too, Vanessa. So I'm thinking about, is it, you know, expecting parents? Is it people who are just weird about nipples and have a fetish? Is it people who are getting ready to breastfeed, or is it other professionals, right? There's a lot of lactation professionals or doulas or midwives or people who would listen to us to kind of find out what we're talking about. So I think there's a bunch of different interests coming into our conversation today. So I'm kind of thinking about that, because we are going to talk about breastfeeding challenges and mishaps and how to fix nipple things. So we're going to jump in. You did some homework. I know you did.
Of course I did homework. I love it.
So what was some of the things you found out about that you, or that you know about the nipple in general?
So
go.
I did some looking into, you know, I figured there were probably some neat historical nipple facts, and I found a bunch of facts about historical use of nipple shields, which we can talk about later.
Pretty cool.
A lot revolved around art and how in most, you know, Renaissance paintings. So, you know, we live in a culture where we think about, like, you know, Janet Jackson's wardrobe malfunction in the early 2000s. You know, oh God, like a nip slip, right?
We're still talking about it. What is it? 15 years later? I don't know how long, but yeah. Oh my God.
It's ridiculous. And like, whereas, you know, in pre-Victorian England, a lot of clothes were actually kind of designed to let the nipple just kind of like peek out every once in a while. And it wasn't a big thing. And so there's a lot of art where you can see, you know, nipples or, you know, people offering the breast and looking slyly at the artist. And they generally fall into one of two categories, especially post-Victorian era, where, you know, it's either like the Madonna nursing the child, so that maternal kind of art versus, you know, more sexualized images, which we can also talk about later, that dichotomy between like the nipple as a tool of feeding versus the nipple as something erotic and suggestive that we can't, you know, talk about or look at. So it was just neat to see how those sort of norms changed over the centuries in terms of nipples and whether it was acceptable to see them or not and what they might be used for. So that was something that I didn't know. I didn't realize that, you know, nips, lips were not as huge a thing hundreds of years ago. And a lot of clothes were actually designed such that it would be impossible for the nip to not slip.
Wow. That is extremely cool. And you talking about art, how many pictures and how many beautiful paintings and sculptures over the in murals and frescoes over the millennia have shown women nursing their babies. And again, it was seen as just part of life and giving in a wonderful, powerful thing. Maybe that's the problem. It was a little too powerful for some of the men in charge many, many, many millennia ago, correct?
Yeah, sure.
even more close into history, right?
Yeah, they've dug up artifacts from you know, pre-Christian times, where, you know, the breasts are just full and they are kind of the focus of, you know, the statue or the art. And because it was seen, I mean, it was life or death. Right.
Exactly. Your population didn't grow. And the whole purpose of life really is to create and procreate, you know? Yeah. So yeah, if your babies didn't breastfeed or the breasts were seen as, you know, symbols of fertility. And that's hugely important. It still is. So yeah, I know we have taken the breast and the nipple and put them into this box that doesn't really fit. Right. Yeah, I know.
So let's take them out of the box.
Let's take them. Oh, take them out. Freeze them. Hey, look, there's my sweatshirt. Wait, can you see it? The whole back.
Yes.
The whole back is booby nipples.
Amazing.
It is amazing. So I wanted to kind of talk about nipples from the beginning. And so we know that nipples are created early in gestation in the little fetus, because why would men have nipples, Vanessa? Do you know?
Tell me, Lori.
Because the fetus is differentiated sex-wise later than nipples are formed. So every little human baby is created with nipples, and then does the breast grow or not? And if the breast tissue is growing as part of the DNA, then we have little females, and if not, we have little males. Isn't that about correct? Yeah. Again, that's just the biology part of nipples. And so we also can bring nipples into what they look like by ethnicity, the pigment of the nipple. How different are nipples looking, Vanessa? Seriously, right?
So different. And so much of how we're trained too is based on white breasts.
Oh my God, yes.
There's so many things that look so different, you know, on breasts of a different color, right? Brown or black breasts. Have you heard about the melanated mammary atlas?
I have. I've taken a peek at it. It's amazing, right?
Which is fabulous. And
would you like to explain to our audience, if we have other lactation professionals listening, what they should be looking at?
Yeah. So it's basically just a catalog of melanated breasts and how different, you know, whether it's like nipple injury or like a dermatitis or something like that, and how those things look on brown and black breasts, as opposed to what, you know, most of the images that we see in books like the Breastfeeding Atlas and, you know, those like sentinel pieces of reference that we all use, it's not generalizable to the whole population. And so it's really fabulous. I don't know if it was a Kickstarter, but I know that there was a lot of fundraising that went into creating it. And now you can subscribe so that you can actually see, and you can be a better lactation consultant, right? Because you can see how things look on different color skin, which is like essential. It's like elementary. It has taken so long.
And embarrassingly, I have to tell you, I never really thought about it as a white cis woman. I never really thought about like what nipple. I mean, I worked with so many women of different colors and different ethnicities over the years in hospital settings and such. And it never really dawned on me that I could miss something because I'm not culturally trained to see it on different color skin.
Yeah.
And that blew my mind. So you're right. That's important to think about where people come from, what their gene pool looks like, and how to serve them best. And so we all need to be very aware of that as we move forward, because, you know, you learn better, you do better, you know, so you just got to be aware of that, especially as, more and more women breastfeed from different cultures and different family cultures and so forth. So yeah, thanks for bringing that up. That's important.
Yeah.
So we know that nipples look differently, and as lactation professionals, we need to be aware of that. And I think that part of that, not even looking different, but how it functions, right? Because we know that there are nipple pores on the front of the nipple, about 10 is the norm, isn't it? About 9 to 10.
Yep.
I remember that being on one of the, don't yell at me. Anybody from the IBLC can't yell at me, but do you remember that being on, was that a test? Was that a question on your exam?
Oh, probably.
It was on my first.
Remember, I blocked it out. I left that. Blocked everything out.
You blocked out the trauma of the exam. So,
if you're a student IBCLC out there, don't worry about it. It's fine. It's gonna be fine.
It's gonna be fine. Just keep telling yourself it's okay. Everything's okay. Everything as you drink your 15th cup of coffee with some gin in it or something. No, I'm kidding. We kid because we love. The exam is not easy, but it's not supposed to be.
Right.
So anyway, but I remember that being a question, and I had studied that, and I was like, yeah, baby, 9 or 10 pores. Right. So the question was, how many pores? People are thinking, what is she talking about? Holes in the front of the nipple to let milk out. And they come from ductal tissue that's in the breast that, you know, the milk comes from. And I always tell people to think of the breast as like a head of broccoli. We've got all the little florets throughout, and you've got little stalks that bring that milk to the nipple ducts, and people never think about the breast as anything else ever again.
I love that analogy. I have broccoli in my fridge, and
forget it. You will never look at that broccoli any other way. And that's kind of gross, but kind of cool. So, so nipples can be big, small, bifurcated. Do you know what bifurcation is? Bifurcation is a little slice across the top where there's two lobes of the nipple that can be a different piece, which is, you know, as a lactation provider, you're like, oh, what's that going to look like? Sometimes with bifurcated nipples, there can be damage in the center between the two lobes of the nipple, which is hard to fix. So I always think about when I see that, like, we've got to make sure that little area is staying healthy too. So there's always, when you're looking at nipple anatomy on, you know, a breastfeeding parent, it's a challenge to make sure that can the baby get their nipple in the mouth? That's always the thing. Sometimes we have, you know, oral boobular disproportion. You know what I'm talking about?
Scientific term, of course.
That's a really scientific term. No, we're kidding. It's not. It just means we have a little baby and a big, big ass mama nipple. And so that can be a little bit of a challenge to get that nipple in baby's mouth at the beginning. So there's kind of ways to do that, ways to kind of deepen the latch. And I always tell parents that this happens to, guess what? The baby's going to grow. It's going to be okay. I mean, that's 99% of what I say all the time is things are going to be okay. But having that ability to get the nipple in their mouth, and sometimes you can actually kind of fold that nipple a little bit to get it in there. Mm-hmm. Right. So there are ways to kind of manage that and ways to provide support, reassurance to the parent that, you know, that it's going to be okay. That nipple is going to not grow, but the baby will. And babies manage most of their parents' nipples, don't they?
Oh gosh. Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, some people look at the nipples that they have, you know, and we can talk about the difference between, you know, the common nipple. Did you know that?
Did you know that the nipple
most people have is called the common nipple. I never knew that before.
I didn't know that either. Are you kidding? There's an actual name. It's called
an actual name. Common nipple.
No.
Yeah. So now we know.
Now we know.
And so versus, you know, flat nipples, which, you know, maybe they just look flat, but then you give them some stimulation and they become sticky uppy, you know, like we expect, versus, you know, inverted nipples. And are they truly inverted or not? But, and then all these other anatomical variations that you're talking about. But what a lot of people, I think, don't realize, is that the way the nipple looks, just to look at it, is not, it doesn't necessarily bear any resemblance to what it looks like when it's inside the baby's mouth.
Right.
Which is magical.
It's amazing what the nipple does inside the mother's mouth. And here's another thing. There's so many people that reach out and they're so worried about their nipple anatomy before breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. You know, the doctor told them, oh, my doctor told me I had inverted nipples. And by the way, what you're hearing is my golden retriever who's being a little excited with her ball right now. So if you guys can excuse this week, it's just Molly. And she's very excited about our nipple conversation.
Yeah. So we can talk about the difference between, so when you talk about inverted nipples, you know, are they actually truly inverted? You know, because do you want to talk a little bit about the pinch test and how we, whatever you go, girl. Yeah. So, when somebody comes to the office and they say, you know what, I can't breastfeed because I have inverted nipples. They're like sticky innie instead of sticky outie, right? You can pinch a couple inches behind the nipple. And if it truly is inverted, it will kind of suck in further. Whereas if it's not, and for most people, it's not. I found this statistic where, only 3% of people who, you know, have like visually, inverted nipples are actually, you know, truly have some symptomology of being inverted. And only 4% of those are truly inverted and will not respond to intervention. So it's like very, 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 very few people have a truly inverted nipple that isn't going to respond to either the pinch test or some stimulation or baby drawing that nipple out as they begin to feed more vigorously. And sometimes with folks who do have what's called an umbilicated nipple. So it is, you know, it's visually inverted and there's like a little piece of tissue that's kind of tying it to the chest wall. And you can use a pump. They make like nipple inverters. And was it you who told me about making your own, where you can take a syringe?
You can make your own. I probably didn't tell you about it, but you can make your own, but they can be, you have to be careful because that raw edge of the syringe, and anybody who's listening can certainly Google this, how to make your own nipple inverter. But I do like a breast pump, I think, better because I think there's a little bit more control.
Yeah.
And women who have that umbilicated nipple or that piece of fascial tissue or whatever that is that's holding the nipple back against the chest wall, that can be painful and it can snap. So some people are like, and I don't want to scare anybody who's listening, not at all, but it can be like a big ouchie when that kind of releases. And then the nipple all of a sudden isn't so inverted anymore. It's rather interesting. And babies are really good at this, aren't they, Vanessa?
Are the babies the best pump?
Baby can get a nipple out like I've not seen. And I think sometimes people are just shocked. They come into this and they think, I can't breastfeed this nipple. And they don't want to talk about it again, because nipple, boo, you know, boo, boo. We can't talk about nipples. And then if you think your nipples are weird, they're not weird. They're
too
big. We've seen everything.
Or too long or too short or.
To anything, right? Put the adjective in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're not. And you'd be shocked at what a baby can do to get the nipple that works for them. So very often, I'm, you know, telling, you know, podcast land to make sure that women or nursing people are very, get some help. It is not, doesn't mean you can't nurse. It just means that we may have to be a little bit more making plans or a little bit more strategic in how we get the baby to latch. So I think that's an important message to get out, that you are not alone. You're not weird and we can help.
Absolutely.
Maybe. Is that a good way to put that?
Gosh, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, Vanessa was talking about that, you know, the pinch test, and but certainly working with a pump, maybe even prenatally, right?
Mm-hmm. Probably not until after about 37 weeks, because nipple stimulation does cause the release of oxytocin, which is the same hormone that causes uterine contractions. So you definitely want to do that with your provider, you know, your midwife or your OB first. But after 37 weeks, often you can use either a pump, or there are these sort of self-contained suction devices called supple cups.
Yeah, right? Supple cups are really interesting. Yeah.
And you can also use them after you start lactating, and they can gently kind of provide that negative pressure, that vacuum pressure to slowly draw it out. And some people find those are super helpful.
Mm. Supple cups are really cool. I found them years ago and used them with a couple of people, but as soon as the milk comes in and gets more voluminous, they tended to not work as well. So, you know, if you're thinking about supple cups, you can look them up online, and they're great. There's different sizes. Or the nipple averters. I think Lancinot makes a nipple averter. There's a couple companies that do, like a little bike horn that you can kind of squeeze and put. Again, you need to be gentle and careful about averting nipples over time. And again, Vanessa, good point, after 37 weeks, and check with your provider because of the oxytocin stimulation. But heck, if you need to get into labor at about 40 weeks, not such a bad, right? Do you want to talk a little bit about what the nipple releases and how oxytocin works?
Oh yeah. So stimulation of the nipple causes release of prolactin in the body and also oxytocin. And so especially prenatally, if you're thinking about, obviously with any discussion of induction techniques.
Oh, of course.
I mean, let me get on my horse for a minute. Like, there's no such thing as a natural induction, right? Like, there's a medical induction, sure. But then anything that you're doing to try and induce labor is an effort to try and get your body to go into labor before it would on its own, right? So there's no such thing as a natural induction, but with, you know, after talking to your provider, if doing some nipple stimulation is right for you, or even, you know, when you're in labor, if things are kind of slow and you want to amp them up, by stimulating the nipples a little bit, you know, like a little like rub, a little twist, some folks who are, you know, super comfortable with their partner may invite their partner to participate, because any kind of intimacy, any kind of physical intimacy is going to release oxytocin as well. And so that's all good. Yeah. And so as you stimulate the nipples, whether it's by yourself or with a partner or whomever, that's going to release those pulsatile ejections of oxytocin in your body, which causes uterine contractions. Okay. And so that is certainly a way to consider helping your body get enough oxytocin in its system in order to maybe kickstart some contractions. If it's your body's really not ready to go into labor yet, though, you may just end up with some like irritatingly intense Braxton Hicks, which are those practice contractions. Right. And so for some people, like nipple stimulation will just kind of cause some intense sensation without a whole lot of cervical change, you know, which is the mark of true labor. So, you know, it's certainly something that people can try in conjunction with other methods. If you are in a hospital for an induction, you know, maybe with like a mesoprostol, or like a Foley balloon or something like that, and they haven't started Pitocin yet, you can certainly talk to the provider about doing some nipple stimulation and see if that allows your body to release enough endogenous oxytocin, that maybe Pitocin won't be necessary. Right. So absolutely. When we think about, oxytocin, it's the same molecular structure. I'm not going to go off on a giant tangent here because it's not exactly the same as Pitocin, but the molecular structure is the same. So when we think about inducing a labor with Pitocin, you know, allowing your body to produce its own endogenous oxytocin with nipple stimulation or environmental modifications is certainly something that could be on the table.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. And you can always ask for a breast pump, yeah. You know, in the hospital. Can I use the pump? Can we do some hand expression? I'm the queen, as you probably know, of hand expression of breast milk prenatally before baby. And that's a whole nother topic. And during labor, I know OBs who tell their, you know, who tell their patients, go home, break out your breast pump and do some nipple stim and do some gentle pumping. That may help. So The nipple is a pretty powerful little queen sitting there, right?
So powerful. So oxytocin, you know, with the nipple stimulation, when it comes to lactation, do we want to talk a little bit about like the physiology of lactation?
We're in it.
So when the baby, I love this, and this was your terminology, Lori, when the baby starts suckling at the breast, that like kind of quick fluttery sucking before the milk lets down, it's calling the milk, right? And as soon as that oxytocin releases, you get a letdown of milk, and then it's accessible to the baby. But that non-nutritive suckling that we call it, also causes the release of prolactin, which is good for milk supply. And so the nipple has a lot to do with, you know, not only the supply of the milk, but also the milk becoming available to baby.
Right. And we know that nerves innervate the nipple. And we know that women who have certain procedures can struggle with breastfeeding. I tell the story about a patient I had once who had surgery, cardiac surgery, as a late teenager, right? She had some congenital heart malformation that didn't get picked up. So she had heart surgery, and they went in on the right breast. So they went in here on the chest wall on the right side to not open her chest for the surgical procedure, which is a huge plus to not have that huge wound. So they went in on the right, they went over to the left, they fixed her cardiac abnormality. But later, when she became pregnant and was hoping to breastfeed, the large 6 or 7 inch incision that she had on the right side of her breast, her right breast had absolutely no innervation at all. It was as normal, non-pregnant looking breast as you could ever imagine. There was no innervation from the body to grow. There was no nipple changes. It was interesting. There was no pigment changes. You know, a lot of women say the areola gets bigger and beefier looking during pregnancy from the hormone shifts. There was nothing. And so it was interesting because the left breast looked like it was ready to party. It was full and veiny, and there was all kinds of things. So interestingly enough, it's a really good story to kind of tell people who are looking. If there are some surgical procedures, and we can talk a little bit about breast augmentation, how that can affect breastfeeding. So clearly, if there are surgical procedures to the breast, we have to imagine that there could be kind of a cutting off of nerves and stimulation for the breast to grow and the nipple to change. But do you want to talk a little bit about breast augmentation, Vanessa? What do you think?
Sure. I mean, breast surgeries in general, I think like so much depends on where this, what kind of surgery, right? So what's an augmentation, a reduction. I took care of a patient once who actually had nipple reconstructive surgery. So not even on the breast at all, but on the nipple. And then when their milk came in, there was nowhere for it to come out, because all of the ducts had been severed. So it wasn't a nerve issue. It was actually the severing of the ducts. So you've got like kind of both of those things there. But it's hard because for a lot of people after any kind of a breast surgery, you don't know whether you're going to have milk making capability if you ever are to get pregnant and lactate. Mm-hmm. With augmentation, I think the best placement is under the chest wall. Am I right?
Yeah, some under the muscle. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Trying not to remove that nipple, right? Or just discussing it with a surgeon if you're planning on breastfeeding to try and keep the nipple intact.
Yeah. And so when we do an assessment, you know, part of a lactation visit is often, you know, visually assessing the breast. And so sometimes you would never know unless you ask if somebody had a breast surgery, because sometimes for cosmetic reasons, a surgeon, if they do, you know, remove the nipple and areola or even cut into it, they might do it right around the areola, right? So that scar becomes really, it's hard to see unless you know it's there. And that's one of the ways that can be really damaging to those nerves and to the ductal infrastructure and all that. And so asking somebody if they've ever had breast surgeries is like essential.
It's essential. And I think if there's any aspiring lactation consultants or lactation professionals listening, it's a must. And you can say it in a way that doesn't offend anyone. You can just say, have you ever had any breast surgeries or breast procedures? That's it. You don't have to get into what it is and why. And occasionally you'll find people who, if it's, people who don't want their partner to maybe know that they've had a breast procedure. I've had that done before. I've had that situation occur before. So then that becomes maybe it's on the paperwork, or maybe it's something you don't say. But certainly, you know, I've had people say, oh, I had a lumpectomy, or I had a cyst taken out of the breast, which is a little less of a concern, I think, as far as really disrupting the nerves and blood supply of the breast. But there are some, you really need to know. So if you're out there and you've had a breast procedure, please don't worry that you can't breastfeed. That's another message I want to get out. We don't know until we know.
Right. So we throw everything. Re-innervation, right? Or recannulation of the ducts as well for some folks.
Exactly. And nerves, those nerves grow, what is it, an inch every 5 years or something? It's very slow, but there is regrowth. So further from the procedure that you've had, the better the chance that the nerves that innervate the breast and the nipple are going to regrow a little bit. And so that may be a better situation. So I had a woman once who said that she had She had an augmentation procedure and it was like the previous year. So breastfeeding for her was a little less optimal because the procedure was so new. And then I've had people who are years out who do a little bit better. So I really think, number one, work with a professional. Number two, please don't think you can't breastfeed at all, because breastfeeding is never all or nothing, right, Vanessa? We got to be really clear about that.
Breast milk's good, breast milk.
Yep. So lots of people who think they can't or won't be able to, or are the other thing that happens, or they're told by their surgeons that it'll be fine. I'm air quoting. Yes. I'm air quoting with my fingers. Oh, breastfeeding's going to be just fine. And they blow it off, but they don't understand what breastfeeding really, even breast surgeons, they don't understand a healthy breast and breastfeeding, right? Who does? Not too many, except for us and some people who, I don't know, but you know what I'm saying? Lots of people come to breastfeeding with a lot of worry about this.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. You make a plan with a professional, you stimulate, you pump, you skin to skin the bejesus out of your baby, right? And mm-hmm. and you never know how much milk that you can make. I've had plenty of parents over the years who have made plenty of milk with breast procedures in their past medical history. So you just don't know.
And I love that point about, you know, it's not all or nothing, because I've had a lot of clients where I'll say that like any breast milk is good breast milk. Like if you mixed feed, if you give baby breast yep. milk for the first 3 days of their life and then never again, like that's fantastic.
Yep.
You know, it doesn't have to be you exclusively breastfeed until they're two or
exactly.
nothing. You know, there's so much middle ground and it's all beneficial.
And it's all going to be okay. Again, my Zen moment. Again, it's all going to be okay. So let's talk a little bit about when you should worry about nipples. You know, we love our nipples. They give us pleasure. They feed our children, but they also can get sick. So mm-hmm. I just want to talk about, because nobody talks about when to worry about a nipple, right? Did you do a little, yeah, about Paget's disease? What do you think about, should we talk about that a little?
Yeah, let's talk about that. Any so like nipple discharge, especially if it's unilateral, so out of one breast, if it's anything other than milk, especially in the absence of, you know, maybe you might get a little bloody discharge if you have like a cracked nipple or something like that. But you know, discharge that's only coming out of one breast, out of one nipple, can be of concern, especially if it's darkly colored, if it's associated with pain, if there's, you know, some kind of lesion on the nipple or on the areola, that can certainly, it's always a good idea to get anything like that checked out by a provider. And if you go to a lactation consultant, they will often be able to spot that and say, hey, you may want to, you know, discuss this with your OB or with your midwife or your primary care provider. Have you spotted something like that in your tenure?
I can't tell you that I have that I've known about afterwards, but I have, you know, something I find myself saying in all breast assessment, almost always is this your normal anatomy? I say to the parent. Because sometimes when you're thinking about, does that nipple look damaged? Does it look like that air? Could there be thrush in that breast if it's super pink and itchy? And you know, sometimes there could be a little lobe, extra lobe of nipple tissue, right? We need to talk about that. Sometimes the nipple just has an extra growth on it. And if you ask the parent, they usually will be able to tell you that that's normal for them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an important part to get. Is this normal for that person? If it's not, did it come from breastfeeding? Did the baby kind of pull a piece of nipple out? I've had that too, where a mom has said that she's had terrible nipple damage, maybe with her first child. And so she says, my nipples have literally changed from that damage. So that can be really concerning, you know, like, okay, well, if this isn't normal for you, but it has been okay, but this is not, then yeah, you should check it out. I mean, what's that damage? There's no damage in going to the OB and saying, can you look at this? So there is a kind of nipple and areolar cancer called Paget's disease. And that's it's weird that it has this extra name, because it's probably named after a Dr. Paget or whatever, you know, it's named after somebody because they always have to get their names on it. But yeah, so it's a rare form of breast cancer. It's only between 1% and 4% of breast cancer diagnoses. So it's rare, but it can really be obvious by, and it follows the ductal tissue, which is one of the reasons that it's more common in women than it is. Although men can get breast cancer too. Can we just shout that out, that men need to be looking? Mm-hmm. But the theory is that it can travel through the ductal tissue, the cancer, and that's why it's more common in women. But it is, you know, it early detection is important, like anything else. The survival rate is between about 82 and 83% at 5 years. And it's something you need to be on the lookout for. And there could be some crusty redness at the nipple. There could be a lesion. There could be a lump behind the nipple. So when you do breast self-exams, right, we're not just going deep into that breast tissue. You need to get your fingers on the areola. Wish I had my, oh, I do. Look what I have. Rainbow boob.
Whoop-a-doop-a-doop. I forgot my rainbow boob at work.
Rainbow boob is here to play with us today, Vanessa. So you're kind of, when you're doing your breast self-exam, you want to get almost like you would hand express milk. You want to get behind there and kind of feel into the base of the nipple as well, because there could be tumors that sit back there. I think we're so focused on these deeper breast tissue tumors that you can get at, but we need to be up here looking out for our little friend, the nipple.
Right.
So it's important and to realize that the nipple can create a breast cancer as well.
For sure. Yeah. Any changes to the breast, right?
Like any changes. And then so we have breastfeeding women, right? We have breastfeeding parents who say, well, I feel this lump. What do you tell them to do in your office?
Oh gosh. So can be, I think a lot of it goes back to that whole, is this your normal anatomy? Because especially in the lactating breast, there are sometimes, you know, it could be like a clogged duct or area of inflammation. If we're going to go by that, you know, the new,
go by our new,
yeah.
Yeah, I know. I know where you're going.
Just on mastitis spectrum, right? I mean, it's so hard to know. Is this a breast lump or is this just lobular tissue, you know, that has developed because of lactation? Maybe you've already lactated before and this is like your second, third, fourth kid. And so you have a lot of infrastructure in the breast that's full of milk versus is this a concerning lump? And so, you know, is it fixed or mobile? Is it painful or not painful? I mean, anything that you notice, though, I always say, like, well, go get this checked out because
it's worth it. Right.
Or it might help.
Right. And a lot of times providers will kind of shush. And that's not the word I want, but maybe kind of say, oh, you're breastfeeding. No big deal. Mm-hmm. I always say to people, just be aware what you're feeling. If you're still feeling this non-movable lump, it doesn't go away when your baby nurses, and it doesn't get hard when your breast is full, that tells me it's probably a duct, right? If it's changing and movable, if the characteristic is changing, but if it seems like it's not changing, it may be something you really need to bark up the tree of your provider. And maybe if they don't listen, you need to bark up the tree of somebody else.
For sure.
Right. So yes, breast cancer has been diagnosed during breastfeeding. We all know that, especially in our field. So just be careful. It's okay to be a little pain in the ass about it. I think that's important to put out to
always, yeah.
To you are to say, you know, and to breastfeeding parents to say, look, this is something I'm concerned about. And if it's not, no big deal. Then I'm an alarmist. But let's just be careful. So we'll leave that conversation there. But I think it's time to talk about the other part. Nipple wounds.
Yes.
Let's talk about nipple pain. Nipple pain. Did you know? I know you may know because we work together, but nipple pain is like one of my biggest pet peeves. Do you know why?
Why?
Because I think we blow it off. Women have nipple pain when they breastfeed. What's the message that they get? Or they give themselves, right? Because they want to feed their baby. So, oh my God, it hurts so bad. It hurts so bad. But you know what? I'm going to do it for my baby. I'm going
to
do it.
Or they're hard to latch and baby finally latched. And so you just want to live with it because you've spent so much time trying to get this baby to latch and they're finally latching and drinking and you're clenching your teeth. And like, but, and so. I've done that.
But what happens? What happens? So.
Oh, damage.
Nipple damage can come from poor latch. It can come from tongue tie babies. It can come from lots of different things. It's usually those two. It's usually those two things, right?
For sure. Yeah. Or, you know, bad technique and not bad, but mistaken technique. For instance, like if somebody doesn't know how to unlatch their baby, right? And they're just pulling them right off.
Or they don't know to get that nipple way back here and they let the baby nipple feed. Guess what? We call this breastfeeding, not nipple feeding. So if your baby is latching on your nipple and causing all kinds of pain, we can fix that. That's something that shouldn't be happening. So I think that's a message to get out, because one of the most pervasive myths about breastfeeding is that it's going to hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to suck it up, and you should take a towel and rough up your nipples, and you should get those things continue to be perpetuated in our culture. And I'm like, what? No. If the nipple hurts, there's something not right, and we can fix it. Mm-hmm. And the reason I add that we can fix it is because I think people say, oh, the nipple hurts, I'm going to stop breastfeeding. And so I've added that on my little repertoire, the we can fix it part, because I want parents to hear that. Just because this hurts, and I'm pointing to Rainbow Boob with my nipple, those of you who aren't seeing us, but just because the nipple is painful doesn't mean we can't make it better. It doesn't mean that we can take it. You know what? You can do something called nipple rest. You can take the baby off the breast and pump, mm-hmm. and let the nipple heal. Look, if this starts to interfere with mental health,
oh my gosh,
it does a lot. So imagine that you're nursing your baby and it hurts every single time, and you don't really want to tell anyone. And so you clench your toes and your fingers, and you clench your butthole, and you sit there and you want to scream the entire feeding. What happens the next feeding? When it's 5 minutes, when it's 5 minutes before you're due to breastfeed, how do you feel?
Oh, awful. Anxious, stressed, fearful, not wanting that baby.
Guilty.
Oh,
I should be able to do this. I'm a bad mother. I mean, I can't. And you know, with the postpartum hormones and mood shifts occurring on the minute, this just makes it worse. So this is why this is my big, huge soapbox, is that if it hurts, it doesn't have to, and we can work to make it better. So nipple pain, the nipple is terrifically full of nerve endings. We didn't even talk about that, but we all know people who have nipples know how sensitive they can be. So you can imagine how that if there's a blister or a blood blister, let's talk about the things we've seen or heard. Blister, blood blister, a chunk of skin, a nipple crack. Ooh, we talk about nipple cracks all the time, but think about how terrible that is. Crack in the nipple.
Yes.
Bah.
Yeah.
So there are so many ways to have damage to a nipple from a nursing child or even a pump. I've seen tons of nipple damage.
Oh, flange sizing is such a huge thing. Did you know that your friendly local lactation consultant can help you with flange sizing?
Yes, sisters. So it's really important to get the right size flange. And both in my iteration as a hospital IBCLC, we only had two or three sizes, and we just went up in the flange, right? Because we didn't know any better. Now we're newer research and newer practice. I've been measuring nipples in the office for probably a year, maybe a little longer. So it's rather new.
Mm-hmm.
It's made a huge difference in how women are feeling pain-wise and getting more milk. So getting the right size flange for your pump, the truest size to the nipple and not the areola.
Yes.
It's okay for the nipple to hit the inside of the flange. I was taught that that never should happen, right? So in practice, with lubrication, usually coconut oil, if you're not allergic, in the flange, with the right size flange. And guess what? You know, we can have a whole conversation about Amazon and how much we hate it and big corporate blah, blah. But let me tell you something. If you want the right size nipple flanges for your pump, most of the time you can find them on Amazon. And there are knockoff companies. I call them knockoff companies because I'm not sure what else to call them. Competitor. I don't know. But there are other companies. And all you have to do is put the size flange you think talk to your local lactation professional to find out about nipple sizing. And you can actually size your own nipples. I'm not going to tell you that you can't order a nipple size thingy on my favorite places, Lactation Hub, but you can order them anywhere and get that nipple size to as close as you can, and then order the flanges that fit you with a little lubrication. It's like magic.
So what are your thoughts on measuring the nipple just like, you know, anytime versus feeding or pumping for a bit and then measuring the nipple?
I don't know. I don't know that it matters so much. My practice is usually nipple at rest. Mm-hmm. And my friend Jeanette Frem, who does the most amazing work in nipple sizing, and she does a great class for parents as far as pumping parents as far as lactation professionals. But Jeanette says you're measuring not at the base of the nipple, but at the front. So you're taking that little measuring tool and putting it right at the front of the nipple to see where it kind of lies. So I don't know that it matters so much. I think that I haven't heard anybody complaining about sizing, and you can't be exact. I mean, you can get as close as possible. And I don't want parents to go freaking out about this, about getting the exact right size, but getting close as possible to your actual nipple. And I do tell parents too, you may have to buy two kinds, maybe a 17 and a 19. Here, I'm going to pull out my nipple measuring tool. Oop, here, look, this is mine from Lactation Hub. And this one does not have even numbers. So I'm guesstimating. And most women are falling in the 19, 17, 15, 13, seriously.
And meanwhile, most of your, you know, big pump companies are giving you a 28 and a 32.
Here's a 24.
28? What's with that?
Because we surmise in the lactation community that most of the, if any research is out there, nobody can seem to really find why we came up with a 24 and a 28 and a 32. Is it came from the dairy industry? Of course, because who makes money?
Right.
Is there any money in breastfeeding, Vanessa?
I wish.
No. So people who are doing research are only people who are invested in breastfeeding. They're not conglomerates. Milking cows makes money. So there's a ton of milk feeding research in the dairy industry, which is, yeah, no, blow your mind, right? So that's the theory. I'm not sure it's 100% true, but it makes sense to me why we don't have better research on nipples. And again, most women are much smaller than a 24. Some aren't. I just measured some the other day who fit a beautiful 24. And the other thing I want to talk about too is that if you are a lactation professional listening, I think it's really important for you to invest in a pump in your office, and you can choose whatever one you want. And the right size flanges all the way to the smallest and the largest. So you can actually pump with women or nursing parents in your office and find out what works for them. Maybe what you're measuring is a little too tight, and maybe they need that little bit of the 19 instead of the 17. They're better with the 19. You can do those visits in your office, and you can charge for them and put it as part of your assessment. So learning about nipple sizing and what feels right and what milk volume looks like, learning all of this is really important part of your practice. So you need to be familiar with that, even if it's what you were not taught in lactation consultant school, which we know what that's like. It can be all over the place.
Yeah, right.
So I think that's become a big part of what we do, is make sure that women are comfortable with pumping. And we do an actual pump fit and discussion visit. I've made that part of our new services to make sure that women can come in pregnancy and talk about this, talk about choosing a pump that's right for them, going through, because basically the pump companies are giving you this monstrous list. And then there's reviews, right? You can read the reviews.
Oh gosh, can I get on a soapbox?
I want to hear you.
So everyone loves the wearable pumps, right? Because you can go about your life with them, but the motors are not powerful enough to be your primary pump. And insurance companies are now reimbursing people for a wearable pump being their primary pump. And then they come in and have milk supply issues because the motor is not powerful enough for somebody to be exclusively pumping with a wearable pump.
You are 100% correct, my friend.
And rant.
Rant. No, you shouldn't end rant. Listen, I just texted with my niece last night who's expecting, and she had a whole range of pumps, and you know, everyone is thinking about, oh my God, who doesn't want to be tethered to the wall with their pump? And I don't want to be plugged in. And all of the pump companies talk about how wonderful their pumps are. I mean, if you are going to read reviews, just be careful where you're reading them, because they can be curated, you know? I mean, so I know. So Vanessa is 100% right. The technology is not there yet. For some reason, we can take pictures of galaxies a gazillion billion light years away, but we can't figure out how to freaking make a breast pump that works for everyone and that you can lay down with and that doesn't leak and that has great battery power and an app that actually works. So all of these things are issues. So if you're hearing us, I think it's important to hear, if you plan on pumping, to think about a good quality double electric pump first. Right? Yeah, I know you're preaching to the sky there with your hands. I can see you. So it's important to think about that. If you want a double, if you want a hands-free pump, yeah, there are $50 options on Amazon. I know the Mom Cozy is cheap and there's all kinds of knockoff brands, but I think in that space, you get what you pay for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you brought up a really good point, if you don't know that your pump is sucking and not in a good way, get it right. If your pump is sucking, but not really good sucking, then you don't know that your milk supply, especially if you're an exclusive pumper, you don't know your milk supply is going into the toilet. You have no one, you think it's you, you think it's the baby.
You think it's you, you think I just can't breastfeed. I just can't breastfeed,
or I don't make enough milk. And you're like, oh my God, you've been pumping with this shitty pump. Excuse my French, but it's for weeks thinking it was great. And that's what killed your supply. So yeah, I know there's a lot to think about here. So that's why I offered these services, because I think it's really important for parents who are making a decision on what breast pump they're going to use. It does matter.
It really does.
It really does. So we can probably talk about a whole nother bit of pumping podcast, which will be coming. But talk to me about what you said to me before we started. So we're nipple focusing, but we're going to end our conversation with more of a conversation about free the nipple.
Free the nipple. So we're talking about nipples, right? So like, I think
we are
based in the United States, for good or for ill, here we are. And so I think, you know, we can't talk about nipples without talking about the fact that nipples are taboo. And there's a campaign called Free the Nipple, started in 2012. And then in 2013, they released a documentary called Free the Nipple, because a lot of activists realized that it was legal in New York City to walk around topless, but it wasn't, you couldn't do that on social media and on the internet, specifically, I think, on Facebook and Instagram. And so they started this movement called Free the Nipple. It's been criticized more recently for being very centered on white folks, cisgender folks, thin folks, able-bodied folks, right? We're trying to become more inclusive as a culture. And so there's been a lot of critique of that recently, at least in terms of the original movement. And what's interesting is there's a lot of intersection now, especially as we're talking about, you know, folks who are transitioning, trans folks, for instance.
Right.
You know, the algorithms on social media will classify certain nipples as female nipples, right, in air quotes, versus male nipples. Interestingly, there was somebody in, her name was Courtney Dimone. She is a trans woman, and she was documenting her transition on Instagram as she began to use hormone therapy. And so she wanted to see at what point would her nipples be censored.
Right? Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah. Because I mean, and that's a real issue. So, you know, we have this arbitrary distinction between, again, air quotes, female nipples and male nipples, which is, of course, super centered on a gender binary, which we know just even biologically is not the case. But it's also centered on this idea of oppressing and diminishing and sexualizing women, those who identify as women, especially when they're engaging in displays of bodily autonomy. So they're not using their nipples to feed their child, nor are they using them for sexual purposes to please, you know, the male gaze, right? It's just part of their body, right? And so when they engage in something, you know, a display of bodily autonomy where they want to show a nipple, whether it's in art, whether it's in a photograph, whether it's in breastfeeding, right? It wasn't until 2020 that lactating parents finally got the right to post photographs of themselves breast or chest feeding their child on Facebook and Instagram. Wow. 2020. I mean, that's bananas.
It is bananas.
Yeah. And so, you know, and there's a lot of discussion about this in culture right now. And oh, the children, like, let's shield pornography from the children, right?
Oh, let's shield David, the most beautiful. That's in the news lately. Let's not show people Michelangelo's David because he has a penis.
Oh God, not a penis.
Oh my God. They may censor us on podcast land because I said the word penis. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm just getting.
Oh, they're going to watch them censor the whole thing because we're talking about nipples. So
no, I never thought about that. We'll have to see what happens.
Rainbow
boob pornography. Go ahead.
Right, that's right. And so a lot of it's algorithm based, like what is pornographic and what is not. And so they have to draw the line somewhere. And like, fine, I get that. But at the same time, if we're protecting children, like children are not the ones sexualizing a female or, you know, female identifying nipple. They're not.
No.
You know, it's adults.
It's us.
Yeah. Me, yeah. For sure.
The problem. It's me. Yeah.
For sure. So, yeah, we need to make the movement more intersectional, but there have been gains in the movement. Like I said, in 2020, people got the right to breastfeed on camera, on social media. And then just recently, about 2 months ago, Meta, so the parent company of Facebook and Instagram, was told by a group of advisors that they should revise their policy on female and female identifying nipples. They have yet to respond as of this recording, but they were supposed to have 60 days to respond. So we should be getting some information, you know, soon, hopefully, about whether female nipples are going to be allowed on the Facebook and on the Instagram.
On the Facebook. Yeah. So the poor nipple, right? We ask so much of her. We ask her to feed our babies. We ask her to give us pleasure sexually. And yet she is such a naughty girl.
Just the nipple.
It's perfect. Exactly.
Advertisements, TV, movies.
Pasties. Women can wear
stuff. The breast is like whatever.
Dancers can dance and they're not naked if they have little pasties on or little things over their nipples. So it's like, poor little nipple.
Arbitrary.
Yeah.
So little nipples. Let's champion nipple. The nipple.
So we have, oh my God, this is such a fun conversation. We could go on forever. But I'm glad that the Happy Nipple podcast actually did a Happy Nipple episode, or at least shining a light on our poor nipples. And what we didn't talk about is nipple healing for lactation. So I don't want to get into specifics because that's going to be each provider is going to kind of do their own thing. But I think I'm going to go back to what we said earlier. If you do have nipple pain or damage, and it can be extensive to a nipple, we can fix it though. Right.
We've got
the powers. We've got the skills. That's what being a board certified IBCLC does, is gives us tools and gives us experience to be able to fix nipples that are damaged. And it doesn't have to end your breastfeeding relationship with your baby. So that's important to mention. So listen, thank you so much.
Thank you, Lori.
A million kisses for coming on a Sunday morning, this beautiful day.
Wish Lori a happy birthday.
Oh, snap. 58 and beautiful, right? No, listen. Yeah. Where did I do? Oh, my husband gave me a card this morning, and I showed Vanessa before, but any of you who stuck with us this long and this conversation on YouTube has to see my card.
Love it so much.
And so he knows, and I have my boobie sweatshirt on, and he knows. And what does it say? It's not a party without balloons. Happy birthday to my love. I love you. Isn't that sweet?
So sweet. You deserve it.
I have my boobie cards, and he knows me. So listen, we'll talk soon. I enjoyed my time, and join us again for another episode of the Happy Nipple. Thanks again, Vanessa. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye.